Tereo Ererangi o Te Mania. This episode was produced in Otatahi by Plains Media, with support from New Zealand On Air.
E nā mana, e nā reo, e nā hō e whā. Tēnā koutou katoa. No mai ki tēne hōtaka. Speak up. Kōrerotia. Tune in as our guests speak up, sharing their unique and powerful experiences and opinions. And may you also be inspired to speak up when the moment's right.
Tēnā koutou, this is Speak Up Kōrerotia, ko Sally Carlton aho. Today we are talking about artificial intelligence, AI, and the ethics that surround it. And this is a really huge topic. There are so many different elements to consider. But it's also one that I think is really pertinent, given just how ubiquitous AI seems to be at the moment. Thinking about some of these questions, and I guess just putting them out there and pondering them, seems to be an important element to go alongside the development and the use of AI. We have four guests on the show who I think are each going to bring some quite different perspectives to this kōrero, which is super exciting. I'm really looking forward to hearing the different views that you bring. We've got Himasha Gunasekera, who's from Lincoln University, Elizabeth Stewart and Donald Matheson, both from University of Canterbury, and Karachiana Tayuru from Tayuru and Associates. I'll leave it to you to introduce yourselves further, but just to say I'm really, really excited about what we're going to be discussing today.
I'm Elizabeth Stewart. I'm a lecturer in the philosophy department at the University of Canterbury, and I work at the intersection of the philosophy of trust and the ethics of artificial intelligence. And my current research at the moment focuses on AI and misinformation and disinformation.
And you're teaching a course, I believe, as well.
Yes, I teach AI ethics from the first year level through postgraduate.
I suspect you're going to have quite a bit to say today. All right, and how about your colleague, Donald?
Tēnā koutou, ko Donald Matheson toko ingoa. I'm a professor of media and communication. I used to be a journalist a long time ago. I use AI in some of my research, Google Gemini. I'm finding it incredibly powerful at doing some basic tasks. But I'm also deeply concerned about where some of my students are at in terms of using it instead of learning. It's kind of subcontracting the learning to AI. And I've written recently about the ethics of AI from a communication point of view. So probably like all of you, I've got lots of perspectives on this, really keen to talk more. Kia ora.
And how about Karachiana?
Kia ora koutou. Yes, my name is Karachiana Tauru. I've worked in the tech industry for about 30 years now. My primary focus has been on ensuring there's a te ao Māori perspective. Probably the last 10 years has been in data and artificial intelligence and ensuring that Māori cultural values are considered with artificial intelligence and data, topics like sovereignty, and also trying to raise the issue or the fact that there's invisible voices in our communities, such as Pacifica, disabled, and all the other minorities who should also have a voice. So it's nice to meet everybody. Kia ora.
Kia ora. I'm so much looking forward to your contribution as well. And Himasha.
Hello. Ko Himasha tako ingoa. Thank you, Sally, for the invitation. It's exciting to be in the panel. So I have a creative background, being a designer myself, and then jump into academics. I'm keen on researching around how AI is impacting on creativity and critical thinking skills. Currently, I'm working at Lincoln University as an educational designer and a teaching advisor, and I'm engaging in a project analyzing how New Zealand tertiary institutes, policies and guidelines around ethical usage of AI.
I suspect we'll get quite a bit into that kind of guideline and framework side of things at some point. I think that's a really important thing as well. What have we got that sort of governs or tries to govern anyway? The use and the development of AI.
Yeah.
As we get our kōrero underway, I think probably the first question is, what exactly are we talking about when we are talking about AI? And how does AI differ from other technologies? For example, One thing that I think might be quite good to clear up is the difference between AI and, say, generative AI. These are all terms that we're hearing, but what exactly are we talking about?
AI is not a new thing. It's been there for a while. I think it all started in 1950s and it's been developing, but it all started becoming a mainstream topic since about like 2018, 2019, once OpenAI was launched. And by 2022, it was on mainstream, like people would use it, you know, in their day-to-day life. So it's been there for a while in the society, AI. And now this generative AI is a new subset of AI, which is commonly impacting on our day-to-day lives.
Another perhaps helpful distinction within the AI world is the distinction between narrow intelligence versus general intelligence. So narrow AI systems are AI systems that are designed to do kind of one or two fairly defined tasks. And general artificial intelligence are AI systems that can do lots of different things across lots of different domains. And currently, we don't have general AI. All the AI systems that we have are narrow, that do kind of one thing very well. So large language models are narrow systems that generate text really well. So I think that's also a useful distinction.
Does that mean we're heading towards general AI?
I think there's a lot of debate about whether or not we will get there. There are certain people that are very optimistic that we'll have general AI within the next few years. I personally am quite skeptical of that, but we'll see.
So how are people using then this narrow AI? I guess we have some that are specifically focused on work tasks, for example, but some are much, much broader than that.
Generative AI systems, there are text-based ones, ones that generate language. That's ones I think that most people are very familiar with, like ChatGPT. But then there are also image generators, audio, multimodal models that can do language and audio and images. So those are all generative AI. But then there are also old-fashioned kind of algorithms that are hard-coded, where it's just an input-output function. So they're trained to take some sort of input and generate some kind of output. Maybe that's a classification. So you might put in images and you might get out some classification of what an image of.
I think we can call it embedded AI, if I'm right. So embedded AI has been there for a while, which was embedded in many of the devices. The traditional AI or the AI we used to had before OpenAI was more like it can analyze a set of data and it can give a prediction on what will happen. For example, an Apple Watch, there's embedded AI in there. It would like monitor things, our activities, and then based on the data, it would give a prediction what will happen. But generative AI is something that can create something new. So it would need some sort of data, we would still have to feed it, but it can create something new, which is the revolution comparing to the embedded AI we had before.
This raises a really good topic here, that the AI uses data. Now, we know that historically that data is biased against women, Maori, Indigenous peoples, you know, everyone basically who's not middle-class European man. I'm painting the brush quite wide there, but it's, you know, generally this is. Well, and we've seen this. So when ChatGPT first became quite popular in New Zealand, we saw it having a very Eurocentric view of the world. It would describe a wedding as a church with a white dress and a man in a tuxedo, which that's a wedding for some people in the world, but not the majority of the world. It certainly didn't speak many languages when it was first introduced. And we know that in New Zealand, for example, data is very biased against Maori, Pacifica and disabled communities. And so when we've got these algorithms and artificial intelligence being pushed out in government, it's relying on biased data or data that's missing because a lot of these invisible communities aren't included in the data. So they keep on becoming marginalised and forgotten about. So I think that's something that's quite important to consider.
I think you've touched on a fantastic point, Karatiana, and I'm really, really keen to hear more about this idea of the data that's behind it and the biases that are incorporated within it. Just as we kind of get into some of the ethics questions, do we have a sense of how widespread AI use actually is in Aotearoa or I guess in the world?
Yeah, I suppose I can jump in to start that, Korero. It's embedded in a whole lot of things without us choosing to use it, which also connects us to ethics questions. So, you know, basic things like when you do a search on the internet, Google search, or when you're using one of the tools from a large retailer, and a whole lot of activities and a whole lot of backroom functions have got AI embedded in them. So there's a couple of questions there, obviously. One is, how much can we make active choices about how much we engage with AI tools? And the way things are set up at the moment, I think regulation is a long way behind the rollout of these kinds of tools, which raises lots of problems and reduces our agency and our control over our own activities to an extent. It's also a matter of many of these tools being hosted overseas and run by companies based in particularly the United States or something like TikTok in China. And so there's a kind of sovereignty question there. AI is sweeping across many of the processes we use. And this kind of program is really useful in just helping us to stop and think. So what would we want from AI? The new generation of AI tools being rolled out, and what do we want of governments in terms of overseeing them or regulatory structures that the companies rolling out these tools themselves apply, or places like universities. So I think one of the big things that frames for me the discussion is that generative AI tools that are emerging are being rolled out by large corporates who are doing it in their corporate interests. They've made enormous promises to the market about how profitable they will be. And so there's a huge amount of generative AI and also other AI tools that are being rolled out in order to try to make money, and a lot of hype around what they will do for us. Love to see us slow down. And it's really interesting to hear some of the leaders of the development of these generative AI tools also saying, we wish we could have slowed it down a lot more than has been in the rollout.
The statistics, there's been a lot of reports over the past 4 or 5 years. Every year we're seeing New Zealanders regularly increasing their use and their trust of AI. Last year, for example, a number of different reports stated about 91% of Kiwis use generative AI to some degree in the workplace. 56% of New Zealanders use it every day for work. But we do know that it's primarily younger people who use AI more often than older people, and that there's definitely a mistrust, a documented mistrust with Māori Pacifica with AI. Some of those concerns are around safety, privacy, intellectual property rights. And if I remember correctly, New Zealand is like maybe third from the bottom in the OECD for uptake of AI. But we're also seeing, a greater increase of the use of AI with government, which I think most of us have seen in the media recently.
Seeing as you've brought that point up, Karatiana, I'd be super interested to hear what you guys have to say about the increased use of AI in government, especially given all these questions we've been considering about whose voice is included, whose data is included or not included in it.
I think the thing that concerns me the most is how hasty some of these decisions seem to have been made. I think there are certainly tasks that AI can do and would be really perhaps beneficial to incorporate into some processes, but AI is not magic. It can't do everything. And so in order for it to work well, it needs really careful design. It needs to be tested. It needs to be audited on the population that it's going to be working with that data. And so if we're deploying these systems in Aotearoa, New Zealand, it needs to be tested and audited on the population here. I'm not necessarily opposed to the use of AI in these spheres, but I am really worried about how hasty it seems like these systems are being rolled out. And so I'm concerned that, you know, AI will be used to replace a lot of jobs. And, you know, on top of the ethics of the job loss, there's also a worry that we lose in that institutional knowledge that those people had. And then we realize, oh, these AI systems are not actually working and they might cause a lot of harm. And now we've lost all that institutional knowledge with the people who had those positions. So I think there are a number of concerns related to how the AI is being incorporated.
Just building on that, a good example for me is from the health context. When you go into your GP, well, when I last went to my GP, she had an AI transcription tool running, which produced a wee report at the end about what we'd discussed. The benefit is that she could face me and talk to me rather than looking at her screen typing away. But then when I asked her, what do you think AI is doing to the way the health interaction is happening? She said, not really sure yet. We haven't had it long enough to reach any conclusions. And in a health context, that's kind of the wrong way around. There's lots of implications. You know, for example, you might be listening better because of the AI tool. It's doing the writing for you. But on the other hand, when you are writing, you are more cognitively focused. And so the GP might be less focused on recording actually what went on in that interaction. There's a whole lot of complexity there. And aside from the fact that the data is going off-site and is being run by corporations rather than by a walled kind of garden within the health system, run on public service schools, but instead run for profit. Leaving that even aside, yeah, it would be really cool to see things done at a pace that is governed by doctor-patient ethics, quality of doctor-patient interaction. Yeah, I completely tautoko Elizabeth's point there that it's just going faster than our capacity to work out what's happening.
I think another myth coming with generative AI is that generative AI can completely replace human. I'm a big fan of AI, but I don't think it is possible because everything generated by AI has to be verified by a human. That's what I believe. Because what often happens in the society is at the moment with this hype, people are not aware of, they have the tools, but they are not aware of how to ethically use those tools. And that kind of directs people to think that I can replace a human being using AI. But definitely, we need to have this right combination or like agency between the human and AI. Otherwise, it's going to be a disaster.
Yes, what Donald said, you know, our data's going offshore. So there's an implication that a lot of Kiwis don't actually understand is that any American-owned company, whether they're in New Zealand or whether they're in Australia, are actually subject to American laws, including the Cloud Act. So that means that all of our data that's being put into these international servers while in New Zealand is actually can be accessed by the American government. You know, and we lose our privacy, we lose our human rights under the Cloud Act. So I think that's something that we need to be aware of. I'm a technologist. I think we should use AI, but I also think that we need to make sure it's regulated. At the moment, it's the wild, wild west, and we're all quite vulnerable, to be honest. We've got to understand that although we call it artificial intelligence, it's not really that intelligent. It's just it only knows the data that you put into it. We need to be concerned that we're a little country in the bottom of the world, and if all of our data is going overseas, what happens if our internet cables are cut and we don't have the internet anymore? What happens if different countries that have our data suddenly deem us to be their enemy? I mean, things are changing so much globally. I think we need to start looking at, you know, having our data onshore. I also think people don't understand the ownership of using AI. If you put something that's copyright into AI, there's a high chance that it'll be used for training data. So again, I think we need to be more educated in AI, and we need that regulation in New Zealand before we roll it out, you know, too much quicker. From a te ao Māori perspective, AI doesn't understand tikanga Māori. It doesn't understand cultural practices. We all end up, you know, having AI systems that are culturally inappropriate. And this is not just Māori, but I mean, I can speak on behalf of Māori culture. And so we will lose our culture to AI if we, yeah, if we're not rolling out slower and considering, better regulation.
In some ways, I actually see AI as another form of colonization. And just a very kind of superficial example is that a lot of text produced by AI uses American spelling and American grammar. And that's just a very, very superficial way of looking at it. But, you know, that's then wiping out a particular way of writing English. I'd be interested to hear any comments you've got on that.
I mean, there's a lot of biasness comes with AI. I mean, apart from the language context, there's a lot of other ways that, for example, so AI is embedded in a lot of surveillance systems. And according to research, it says that US police is using AI embedded systems for their surveillance systems. And then there's a tendency that it would always alarm neighborhoods with lots of Black Americans rather focusing on white people. So AI always create that kind of bias. It can be like gender biasness, it can be race, or it can be on disability of people. So there are like many ways that AI is biased, and it creates a whole lot of hallucination around information and keep feeding misinformation to the society.
I'm a strong advocate saying that AI is a new form of digital colonization. But I also argue that if we used AI and learn AI, then we can use it to empower ourselves. All invisible communities can use AI to empower themselves. But if we don't, then yeah, we'll be colonized. Definitely in the health, for example, we see algorithms that are trained on typically European and American populations. And so it ignores bone density, tissue density, skin pigmentation. It doesn't apply to New Zealand. Facial recognition technology. A few years ago, facial recognition technology couldn't see people of colour. Then a person of colour, a woman's computer scientist, called it out. Then we started seeing images of people of colour being labelled as gorillas and apes. Recently, we've seen facial recognition technology discriminate against Māori. A classic case, Tiani Solomon in Rotorua was misidentified at a supermarket because of facial recognition technology. And the reason that happened was because the training data didn't use New Zealand data. It also doesn't pick up on the traditional facial tattoos, the moko. It just creates a blur or makes it look like someone's wearing a scarf or trying to hide their face. So, I mean, there's thousands of examples of colonization of AI. But again, it's up to all of us to ensure there's regulation and to work on that data and to keep calling it out.
Talking about this bias, I'm kind of doubtful, like, how much control do we have on this biasness, because there's a big monopoly in AI industry. So few companies like Microsoft or OpenAI sort of like keep leading in that segment. So with that monopoly, we don't have much power as users. So that's a big concern with this mass use of AI.
This is partly a question of kind of literacy. I kind of do a little thought experiment of casting my mind back to Wikipedia when it emerged. Wikipedia was promoted as an objective record account of all the knowledge in the world. And of course, it's a long way from that. 90% of entries are created by men, for example. And it's vastly biased towards English-speaking world and to its US-based. And in many ways, it's got biases running right through it. One response is to get involved in Wikipedia and change things. But another is kind of literacy, that you use it skeptically, use it for certain purposes. It's good to look up Beyoncé's birth date, but not very much else about the music world, maybe. And that literacy piece is part of the slowing down of AI. I notice it with my students that a lot of students are really unsure of what AI is generating for them. So, for example, a generative AI tool, Gemini or ChatGPT, when it's giving them suggestions around how to write an essay. And what we need to say to them as educators is, you can use AI for certain tasks, but you need to understand what it is that AI is producing for you. And that's really quite hard given the black box nature of AI, and also because it's all so new and because it's changing so often. But I think literacy will be part of it. Understanding that it's a colonizing and tool arises out of a cultural, political context of ongoing colonization of the majority world by the minority and so on. As an educator, I feel that's part of my job at the moment, to help students understand what the tools enable and what their limitations are. But of course, we need way more public debate around this. We need more radio shows like this, which is why I think Elizabeth was mentioning before, the government's and the Labour opposition's enthusiasm for rolling out AI tools to save money is really quite troubling. They're leaping in before they've looked.
Perhaps just to add to the conversation around bias, AI, especially generative AI tools, are they're great homogenizers. They take in all this information and they kind of turn out stuff that's very similar to whatever the soup is, the soup of data underlying it. And so, again, thinking about, well, where is this data coming from? Where are these models being trained? And also thinking of the education piece, something that I think people using these systems may not understand is that in using them, they're also reshaping themselves in important ways. And so I worry that as more and more people start to turn to these systems and rely on these systems, we decrease the amount of diversity in the world and decrease the amount of really interesting differences that we have. So I think there's a lot of work to be done around making sure that AI systems are representative of the populations that they're deployed in, but also making sure that people understand that even if you have a system that's maybe trained on New Zealand data, it's still kind of going to be a very generic version of New Zealand data. And it's really important that we sort of take the time to form ourselves before turning to AI, so that we don't all kind of lose the things that make us really special and different and interesting.
I think just to add to this, I mean, we have to talk about governance of AI. We've talked about ethics, but from a governance perspective, internationally, there's a lot of governance work being done, but again, it ignores Indigenous peoples. It very lightly touches on gender discrimination. In my opinion, you know, New Zealand, we were kind of at that stage where we could enforce, or we could grab international governance frameworks and adapt them to New Zealand. The government could include clauses in their procurement contracts that if we're going to sign up to an AI provider, it needs to meet these minimal requirements. And internationally, we have tools such as AI impact assessments, algorithm impact assessments, which look at the technology and look at the impacts. I have yet to see one that actually includes Indigenous peoples, for example. People's religious views, I haven't seen that included. And I think New Zealand, we're small enough to create, be world leaders, to protect our communities by, you know, changing those governance frameworks and implementing them.
I think one concern that you've kind of brought up here for me is, as our world faces ever greater crises, environmental, geopolitical, whatever it may be, as the world relies more and more on AI, are we losing the opportunity to think more outside the box, which I think is probably what we're going to be needing as we move forward?
we will lose it unless we work on that at this point, because we need to increase awareness like more and more. I think our tertiary education system is struggling a lot. It's getting better, but struggling a lot how students are like using AI in their day-to-day learning. That's going to be a huge impact on students' creativity and critical thinking if they are trying to use AI 100% in their work. Right now, like, universities are honestly struggling to come over with this AI issue. It's not too bad as it was. Like, we are improving. The teachers are trying to sort of incorporate. I mean, it's not that they completely acknowledge AI, but they give some space for students to use AI and use a bit of critical thinking and their creativity, and then use AI as an aid to sort of improve or like search for more information and kind of thing. But there will be impacts on critical thinking and creativity unless we use it in the right way, and or unless people are aware of how to use it ethically. Like, for example, when it comes to research, so I'm a member of Lincoln University Ethics Committee, and 90% of the applicants are trying to use AI either for their data analyzing or like data collection. So we are a land-based university, and a lot of research based on our land, water, and our environmental systems. And those data should be preserved. But if you are using an AI-based system to analyze those data or collect data, that's going to be a big concern, where we don't have control over our data is stored outside New Zealand. But unfortunately, we don't have bulletproof guidelines or regulations for that. Sometimes by the time we develop the regulations, it's gone beyond the control, because AI is keep changing in a pace where we are struggling to sort of respond or regularize it. So in that case, we have so many challenges to overcome. So recently, my experience around AI was I asked ChatGPT to count how many E's are there in 13, and every time it got wrong. So I was using the free version, but one of my other colleagues who used the paid version got the correct answer. So where is the equity? When I don't have the paid version, I'm not getting the right information. But if I have the paid version, I get some sort of, you know, correct information up to certain extents. But nowadays, like, you know, they have paid version, they have a $20 package per month and so many versions. And ultimately, if you want the pro version, you want to pay a price for that. So where is it directing? Should generative AI become another subscription like Netflix or YouTube? That's a big concern around that.
Anytime a new technology is created, we as a sort of human species need to gain skills to use it well. But in the process, we also lose certain skills. So we call this de-skilling. And some skills it's fine to lose, like morally speaking, it's okay that we all don't know how to sew our own clothes, for example. That's not necessarily a skill that morally we need to retain. But then there are other skills that I think are really important that we hold on to, and increasingly we need them even more, perhaps. And so learning how to critically consider our own values, our beliefs, and our goals, all the things that are really important for critical thinking and the ability to exercise our agency and our autonomy. Those are all skills that I think are really important to hold on to. And those are also the skills that I think using AI threatens to undermine the most, sort of offloading our work of figuring out who we are and who we want to be. And this is what I talk to my students about. It's like, there are some of your assignments that you're going to do where actually the point of the assignment is to think about who you want to be. And if you offload that to AI, you miss this really valuable opportunity to do the work of self-creation and self-development. Certainly, it's the case that you know, some skills, it's fine that we offload onto AI, but we need to be really careful about which ones they are. And I think that's part of what I see as my job as an educator, is to help students figure out, what do I hold on to? What's really important for me, and what is okay to offload? And thinking carefully about also the justice, you know, building on what you just said, like, it's not the case that these are neutral tools. Our use of them is linked to exploitation. It requires the exploitation of natural resources to have these tools. And so that's another layer of critical thinking about, you know, is this really a tool that I want to use? If it's perhaps linked to all these different forms of injustice.
As you were talking, Elizabeth, I was thinking about what my lines in the sand are, and things like customer interaction, relationship with a big company. I want to speak to a human being, and I value, in fact, I've changed insurance providers because I valued the company that has a human being at the other end of the phone. So ethically, I make my own decisions there. A music concert that uses a really nasty AI-generated poster, I just won't go to because it's undermining the creativity of the artist there and of the event. So I think each of us will be developing our lines in the sand, and that's, as an educator, I'm inviting students also to do that. The thing that particularly worries me about the large language models, the ones that talk back to you, is that relationship dimension, that these human-computer relationships come to replace human-to-human relationships. I think, Himasha, you said it's really important to have humans in control of things. Sorry, I haven't got you the exact words right there. And that, for me, is right at the heart of it. A tool where a human is being replaced by a computer is one where I'm worried about what we're losing. A tool where a human is no longer in control of the output and doesn't know how things were generated by that tool is also a source of worry for me. So I hope, as a society, and that's partly what the regulatory stuff is about, that we can agree on some of these lines in the sand. Years ago, we did it for privacy, and privacy law has gradually strengthened. And I think we need to rapidly do that for AI, gathering all the things we've been talking about today. Our government needs to gather these concerns together and work out what our collective lines in the sand are.
Yeah, I agree with what everyone else has said. I'm also a little, I guess, optimistic about the future. I remember when calculators first came to the New Zealand education system, right? And everyone said, oh, you know, no one's going to learn their times tables, no one's going to do math anymore, everyone's going to use calculators. But the reality is sometimes it's quicker to do math in your head than use a calculator, right? So, I mean, especially, you know, those of us who had the times tables, the 1 to 12 times tables ingrained in our memories at primary school. But then I also think that, you know, technology's evolved over time. I recently had a conversation about traditional artists who would use, you know, rocks and wood and hand tools, and then they used electric tools, then they used artwork on the computer. I think it's just things evolve. I guess from an education perspective, I mean, I don't work in education, but from an education perspective, I think it's important to document how you've used AI. What were your prompts? What was your initial thinking before you used the AI? What did the AI change about that? Was there hallucinations? What did you learn from that? And I think the education system could probably look at more critical thinking subjects. Again, not being the educationist, I think there's opportunities there to grow. There's opportunities to appreciate more of the human things, such as, you know, maybe theatre or, you know, live music, dramas, lots of things I think, you know, our society will evolve with. From a te ao Māori perspective, this is a very serious concern. I see we're going to have a lot of Māori language teachers be displaced from AI because AI is doing a really good job of, and very quickly, you know, learning te reo Māori. But it will never, I mean, AI doesn't have a human emotions. So we still need to be able to go, you know, back to our marae, back to places and physically learn different aspects of our culture, speaking on the marae, singing, haka. I mean, maybe that might be a blessing where that will make people come back and we can, you know, you know, leave the AI behind and, you know, have those human interactions and develop those human bonds with our cousins and friends more, things will change a lot. We need to be prepared to, you know, make those changes.
Yeah, I think there's a really big need to do more empirical research to understand how is it that these systems are actually reshaping human interactions, and are they facilitating better ones, or are they perhaps undermining our social skills? And there is some empirical research coming out showing that using AI socially is not great for human relationships, actually. It decreases people's willingness to compromise, to engage in pro-social behaviors. People who use AI for social reasons a lot report finding human social interactions less satisfying and more difficult. So this is very concerning because I think social skills are definitely skills that we need to retain and to foster and get better at, because human relationships are messy and they're difficult, but they're so morally important. You know, we are social animals. We need to figure out how to live well together. And so if relying on AI to, you know, be our friend or help us navigate social situations, if it's pushing us towards being worse at those, that's a really big problem. I think there's a need to better understand how these systems are actually impacting people and impacting communities as well. It's not just an individual issue, but, you know, thinking about the Maori world, you know, how is AI going to impact the actual communities that are trying to figure out how to live together here?
One really interesting wrinkle in all of that is, and I've noticed it with my own students, that come across people who are neurodiverse, particularly ADHD, who find some AI tools really useful in order to scaffold their relationships. A student who is dyslexic, for example, might find an AI tool really useful in order to create the kind of written English that is going to achieve their goals for them. Or if an interaction feels really difficult, to be able to use AI to mediate that a bit. And I'm really conflicted about that, because exactly as Elizabeth is saying, we need to nurture our humanity and our ability to, our skills in working, living well together. On the other hand, there are people who are systematically excluded from some parts of social and economic life who are finding these tools are enabling them. I suppose that's all part of the piece of taking things step by step and working out what the costs and benefits of certain tools are. Obviously, transparency is really important in that, and also supporting people to make good decisions. But the neurodiversity question is, I think, one where we've got a long way to go in order to support each other in making good decisions there.
I'm glad you brought that up, because I should qualify what I said there. So that research that I was referencing is specifically focused on AI systems that tend to be sycophantic. So ones that are very, very affirming of people, which makes sense. Like if you're talking to an AI system that's incredibly affirming, then it's, you know, going to reinforce what you already feel. But there are certainly AI systems that are specifically designed for neurodiverse people to help facilitate, to help build social skills. And so I think there's actually potential for some of these systems, if they're really carefully designed and they're tested, to help people build social skills. So I think there's certainly potential there. So I don't want to like write off all AI systems, but again, thinking concretely about the impacts of particular systems and, you know, how do these design decisions around how friendly an AI system is, for example, how do those design decisions actually impact human behavior, I think is important for us to understand. And unfortunately, it just takes time. It takes time to figure this out. I wish we could know kind of ahead of time, but you kind of have to try it and see what happens.
I wonder as well about the importance of research or more investigation into how people trust AI, and for example, people using AI to ask questions about their immigration status is one that I've come across. You know, laws are changing all the time an individual's immigration status changes depending on various issues, and if they're not actually getting advice from a qualified immigration lawyer, for example, there are risks in that.
I'm aware there's a lot of research in New Zealand about elderly people. I was just made aware of it with Māori Pacifica, but I understand it's a wider issue that elderly people use AI for companionship, and they develop these relationships with the AI. And as I said, I mean, the AI is basically, you know, agreeing to everything that the person's inputting. So there's lots of cases where people ask the AI, oh, I don't feel like taking my heart medication today. Will it be okay? And the AI goes, no, of course, yeah, take it tomorrow. It's fine. So, and then serious health issues are happening. So, and then another case I'm aware of, I've mentored a couple of master's students, and one of them created a counselling app for Pacifica people. It's a cultural thing. I don't understand the nuances, but there's some things that you can't talk about to your elders in different cultures, right? But if you can talk to an AI, and yeah, there's been huge success with that. So I think there's good things and bad things with AI, and we've just got to be really careful about, yeah, how we do it, you know, what we ask it for.
Adding to what Kartiana said, we can see like more and more younger generation, not even young people, like people in every age segment tend to use so-called AI agents as their personal buddies. And majority of these AI agents are not reliable, so they use them as their day-to-day companions or their therapists, or, you know, like not having that professional support but having something not human and something that doesn't have empathy or feelings can be very dangerous. Of course, as people, as human, we love tools. We pass so many eras, like from Stone Age, we love inventing tools. And I think AI is the latest tool that we have. And we are in a stage, we are kind of struggling how to use that. So we had different type of tools. We invented steam engine. And as the time goes on, we realize how much impact it makes on our environment. And then we start building up regulations to protect our environment. And AI is our latest tool, and we need to regularize it to protect our environment and our mankind. But the challenge is this tool is evolving in an alarming speed that's sort of out of our control. And we have not been able to respond fast enough to regularize that.
I just saw something yesterday that the kind of the human cost of AI and the environmental impacts and the kind of projections that X number of more thousand deaths per year from air pollution related to the storage of AI, for example. So that you're right, the environment is one, but it's kind of, it's really big, actually, the impact on health, relationships, all sorts of stuff. Yeah. Just as we start to finish up, we've talked a lot about the need for regulation. How do you see this all progressing as we move forward?
In practical terms, I can imagine New Zealand being quite slow. I don't see the political will. And I imagine what will happen, my guess is that there'll be enormous pressure from the companies that have invested large amounts of money in minimizing the regulatory burden on them. The one place that I think has got power to resist that is Europe. And a bit like the GDPR acronym for the regulatory structure, which is required across all European countries in terms of regulating the digital space, will be updated. I imagine in 5 years' time, the Europeans will be beginning to come up with quite hard principles around AI. That's my guess. And then we will follow maybe a few years later. We do have the capacity here to move quite quickly. And we have a very rich bicultural and multicultural context here where we could develop things that are appropriate to Aotearoa, but I don't think we will. I see the corporate power from particularly US companies slowing us down massively and regulating, unfortunately.
Yeah, I totally agree with that. And I think, you know, at this stage, our governments signed very long contracts with some of these big corporations who are anti-regulation. So I think the more the world looks at country sovereignty of their own data, country sovereignty of their own AI infrastructure, and also I think if Māori and other invisible voices, you know, start becoming more proactive and more heard, we might see government starting to change their perspectives on regulation. But yeah, I don't see it happening in the very near future.
Yeah, I would echo that, and perhaps just add that as the governments increasingly incorporate AI systems into their sort of processes and workflows, it really does become part of the infrastructure, which makes it that much harder to sort of go back and regulate stuff that's already like deeply embedded into systems. So yeah, I think as AI becomes increasingly part of government processes, it's going to be that much more difficult for them to regulate it.
Correct, Anna. Is there anything from Tikanga or Te Ao Māori that you see as potentially guiding how this might be put into practice?
The Waitangi Tribunal's made a number of findings and recommendations. Some of them stem back from the Y262 that says that all Māori knowledge or mātauranga Māori is a taonga. It's sacred. It has tiriti rights and obligations. Up to the Waitangi Tribunal finding on the e-commerce chapter of the, now I always get the acronym mixed up, the CTPPA, the Trans-Pacific Agreement. And so that also said that data is a taonga and subject to Māori data governance, i.e. te tiriti or Waitangi. So I think, you know, if we start considering that data is a taonga, that an AI system that uses Māori data is a taonga, and then, yeah, it should be subject to Māori data governance and Māori AI governance rights, then I think that's a good footing for the New Zealand government to start considering regulation from a country perspective. In my opinion, we should be looking at country sovereignty. We should be looking at the human rights of artificial intelligence, the intellectual property rights of the data, and then creating regulatory frameworks that weave through Te Tiriti o Waitangi and Tikanga Māori in a way that benefits all of New Zealand, but using Māori as the lead-in to do that.
That seems to me like it has a lot of potential anyway. I can't see it happening straight away, but the idea is something to aspire to, perhaps.
I have a belief we will get there, but the question is, how long does it take? Because at the moment, we are responding really slow to these issues.
Any final words as we wrap up?
Oh, I just wanted to say thank you for the kōrero. We need more of these kinds of discussions. And words like principles, sovereignty, ethics, valuing the human need to be right at the front. And maybe the positive spin is that this is an opportunity for us to revalue here in Aotearoa how it is that we want to live well together as technologies impinge on those. So it's a chance to look back at principles and the standards that unite us here in Aotearoa.
That seems like a very lovely, upbeat note to end on. Thank you, Donald. Tēnā koutou, thank you all so much. This has been such a great discussion. I've really, really enjoyed it. I've really valued the different perspectives you've brought to this as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ka kite. Ka kite. Thank you, Sally. Ka kite.